They want to see Australia take accelerated action at all possible levels to address the threat of climate change.
Healthcare under the sea. It's Friday, April 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. You can join us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Chinese accused of digging away homes. Americans in Ukraine. The war plight of animals. New York's farm to park. China's wolf warrior diplomats. In the movies, that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A United Nations delegation has arrived to evaluate the health of the World Heritage-listed Great Barrier Reef in northeastern Australia. The visit comes as the world's largest coral system suffers another widespread bleaching event. The UN monitoring team is considering whether the reef should be added to the list of World Heritage in danger. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The United Nations mission will assess the impact of climate change on the Great Barrier Reef, as well as localized threats, including pollution and overfishing. A report from UNESCO, the UN scientific and cultural body, had previously said that not enough was being done to protect the reef from global warming or to meet water quality standards. Lobbying from Australia had convinced UNESCO's World Heritage Committee to give Canberra more time to address its concerns. The Australian government has insisted the Great Barrier Reef was the best-managed reef in the world and that multi-million dollar programs were boosting its resilience. Earlier this year, Australia announced a plan to fund projects that reduce erosion, as well as pesticides and fertilizers running off farmland into the sea. It would include conservation efforts, including combating coral-eating crown-of-thorn starfish and illegal fishing. Imogen Zetoven is an advisor to the Australian Marine Conservation Society, an environmental organisation. She told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that the UN mission would examine the current health of the reef.
They'll be looking at Australia's record on climate change, because the World Heritage Committee last year requested this mission and they said that they want to see Australia take accelerated action at all possible levels to address the threat of climate change. And secondly, they'll be looking at the local threats that are happening, such as poor water quality, fishing pressure, and what is the Australian and Queensland government doing to reduce those pressures.
The Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, which administers one of Australia's greatest natural treasures, has reported widespread bleaching in its central and northern regions. This occurs when the ocean is too warm for too long. It forces the coral to expel symbiotic algae that give it most of its energy and its vibrant colours. Reefs can recover from bleaching, but it can take years. If water temperatures don't return to normal, the coral can die. Should the UN downgrade the reef's conservation status, it would be the first time a natural World Heritage site has been placed on the in danger list, mainly because of climate change. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Despite risk of death, Thailand sends Myanmar refugees back. Prolonged Myanmar blackouts causing major problems for people and businesses. India condemns civilian killings in Ukraine. Court allows Indian journalists to travel abroad to speak about intimidation. JD.com founder Richard Liu leaves CEO post. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more. Join us online at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Villagers in Zimbabwe say a Chinese mining company has told them they will have to leave their homes to make way for a plant. The company denies plans to forcibly move the villagers, but a lack of transparency has many fearing they will be pushed out of their ancestral land. Columbus Mavunga reports from Mutoko, Zimbabwe.
Some villagers in Zimbabwe's Mutoko district say they are not sure what the future holds now that Chinese companies such as Jinding Mining are exploring quarry mining in the region. Most are reluctant to even talk about it for fear of retaliation. But this 42-year-old farmer who asked that his name be withheld is eager to speak about the company's plan to mine an area that stretches across 180 hectares and includes some of their homes. He says the area they want is where we live and where our cattle graze. It's our source of income. We wonder where we will go. The area they want is too huge. Our ancestors' graves are there too. We wonder where they will relocate them, says the 42-year-old farmer. Activists say more than 50 families could be forced out by one mining company alone. Richard Nwe of the Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association says his group plans to ask the courts to prevent the eviction of villagers.
In order to help the communities, we are raising awareness on environmental issues. We are researching on these issues to inform legal reform. And then we also take matters to court as a last resort to have their remedies addressed or issues addressed.
An environmental impact report by Jinding Mining has addressed the concerns of villagers, says Amukela Zidange from Zimbabwe's Environmental Management Agency.
What we only do as the agency is to take the report that is brought by the project owner. We go through it. We verify whether what is being indicated in the report that consultations were done were really done. We actually go to the ground and triangulate whether what is in the report is actually what took place on the ground.
The farmer who spoke to VOA said the Jinding company asked no ordinary people about their concerns over the mining project, but only the local leaders. Officials at Jinding and the Chinese embassy in Zimbabwe were not available for comment. In a statement, the embassy said Chinese investors in Zimbabwe are working for the betterment of the country. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mutoko, Zimbabwe.
Happening now in Asia, authorities in Australia's New South Wales issued major flood warnings as heavy rain lashed parts of the country's most populous state. Some residents in low-lying areas of Sydney and its surrounding areas were told to evacuate. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. 12 days before Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February, President Biden urged all U.S. citizens staying or living in Ukraine to immediately leave the country. And although many have, other Americans remain in Ukraine and have no plans to leave. Anna Kostyschenko has the story.
Hey, Irina, it's Rachel.
Oh, hey, Rachel.
I finally was able to find two generators available for these troops in Slovansk that I've been trying to get. So I'm like super happy.
Rachel McVeigh makes more than 30 calls just like this one every day. She's one of the many American volunteers who decided to stay in Ukraine after Russia's invasion and help.
It's encouraging to see how everybody is coming together, and it's not a situation where anybody just says, okay, Army, you do your thing, you provide for yourself. Like, This is all personal for each one of us.
For Rachel, the morning of February 24th started with a call from her parents in the United States. They told their daughter Putin had invaded Ukraine, and the Russian military started bombing several Ukrainian cities at once. Among them was the capital, Kyiv, where Rachel had been living for 6 years and where she worked as a copywriter.
One day you have your city, you have your life, you're sitting and drinking coffee with friends and thinking about your career plans, and then the next day you're on your phone and you're getting updates like enemy paratroopers have landed outside of the city.
She had the means to immediately return to her parents in Philadelphia, but she didn't.
On the first day of war, I had a friend who was already in Lviv. Her and her husband were driving out of the city. They were driving to Poland by car, and they offered to take me with them.
Rachel had her reasons to stay in Ukraine.
Ukraine to me is freedom. Where I found myself, it's where I found friends that I truly love and connect with. It's where I found love.
American Charles Bonds also arrived in Lviv with just a small backpack. Bonds is a historian who decided himself to study in Stalinism. He came to Ukraine from Indiana on February 1st, planning to settle and teach in Ukraine.
On the 24th of February, I woke up, went out to smoke a cigarette, and on the general balcony of the apartment, I saw people with suitcases. And I realized what was going on almost immediately, that the war had started.
Bonds and his American colleagues left for Lviv on the first days of the invasion, but he didn't leave Ukraine.
We're appealing to America to raise funds. We are purchasing necessary tactical items and humanitarian items, tactical items.
Bonds believes Ukraine will emerge from this conflict victorious.
In 2 decades, Ukraine will be the most powerful nation in Europe. I have every faith in that. And people may laugh at me, but they laughed at people who predicted the fall of the Soviet Union.
Bonds, like many others, is convinced Ukraine will win. And nothing, even Russia's invasion, can make him leave the country he has come to love. Anna Kostyuchenko for Voice of American News, Lviv, Ukraine.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. India's power sector has been targeted by hackers in a long-term operation thought to have been carried out by a state-sponsored Chinese group. That, according to a U.S.-based private cybersecurity company, detailed in a new report. You'll find all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Since the start of Russia's invasion, millions of Ukrainians have fled their homes, leaving behind thousands of animals in shelters and zoos. And now it's up to dozens of volunteers and international groups to care for them. Maria Prus has the story.
Since February, Irina Shevchuk and her family have been providing shelter to more than 60 people in their house in the Khmelnytsky region. Almost all of them are heading west, and most of those with pets have brought them along.
I don't even know, maybe I live in a bubble, but all around me I see people who take care of their pets like they really are family members.
But many other Ukrainians left their pets behind, says Kyiv native Maria Bondarenko, who along with her family is helping take care of people and now animals.
I think that if you've taken the responsibility, you have to think about those who cannot survive without you. And that's true even in the most difficult of times.
Volunteer and Kyiv native Dmytro Revnyuk started a movement called Zoopatrul, and together with dozens of volunteers is trying to help abandoned animals. He says some people left their pets behind, thinking they would be back home in days.
I made a post online saying that if someone left their pets behind, we will free them for free. In 3 days, we received 827 responses and applications. That means 827 people left behind their cat or dog. In one neighborhood, we had a few apartments with two or three animals locked in each home.
Some world organizations are helping Ukrainians and their pets flee Russia's aggression. One of them is the U.S.-based International Fund for Animal Welfare, or IFAW. It opened aid centers at the Ukrainian-Polish border.
There aren't great statistics about all of the animals and people that are crossing from Ukraine into Poland, but I have heard that it's approximately 80,000 people per day. And we believe there are about 500 to 600 animals crossing into Poland every day.
Some just couldn't be saved. At the Borodyanka Municipal Shelter in Kyiv region, which was occupied by Russian forces for over a month, volunteers say they found 485 animals that had been locked inside alone for 5 weeks with no food or water. A Ukrainian animal rights organization, UA Animals, says only 150 survived. The European Association of Zoos and Aquaria is coordinating work to save zoo animals in Kyiv, Mykolaiv, and Kharkiv, and are raising funds to help.
The zoos are likely to need a lot of support once the war is over, supporting the zoos getting back on their feet, rebuilding enclosures, rehabilitation of animals, etc.
Together, international organizations and Ukrainian volunteers have saved hundreds of animals and plan to rescue more as long as the war continues. Maria Prus, VOA News, Washington.
Now that you've heard our story, see it. It's online at VOA Asia Facebook and voanews.com. But a warning, the story contains graphic images that some viewers may find disturbing. Making headlines in Asia, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai said in an interview this week, the United States is trying to be strategic about how it realigns its trade relationship with China, but is not interested in a large-scale decoupling or trade divorce. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Mark Weiss, a farmer in Long Island, New York, was on the verge of bankruptcy because of the coronavirus pandemic. But instead of shutting his farm down, Weiss turned his land into something amazing. Maxim Avalchenko has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Mark Weiss, a sixth-generation farmer in Long Island, New York, was hit hard by the COVID pandemic. Facing bankruptcy, he decided to take a risk and turned his land into a small amusement park. Walking through corn mazes, meeting aliens, feeding barn animals, and having fun on a trampoline, Weiss's Water Drinker Farm has something for everyone.
We have over 70 acres of outside space, so it was really easy to spread out during COVID and get some fresh air with families. We have our tulip festival in the spring. We have our sunflower festival in the summer and into fall. Then we go into our fall festival with our pumpkin picking, hay rides, the corn maze.
Water Drinker Farm has events planned for the whole year round, including a Christmas lights festival and Santa Claus in the winter. This farm that was on the brink of bankruptcy now brings smiles as well as income to its owners and visitors alike.
We came here the first time for the Tulip Festival, and it was wonderful. And I was very happy to see that they did so much for the families, especially after the virus, especially for me. And then we heard about the Sunflower Festival, so we came again.
I thought it was good. It was my first time here, and I enjoyed it. It was fun. Just seeing her happy, her having
watching
fun,
her smile
the sunflowers.
And having a good time is the best thing.
Yeah.
As long as she's enjoying it, then we all enjoy it.
We just came back from sunflower picking. I love this farm. We've come here multiple times.
And I saw the llamas.
As a souvenir from Water Drinker Farm, visitors can buy flowers and fresh produce. For now, they are enjoying the bright, chewy sunflowers, preparing for the next visit and the fun it'll bring. For Maxima Vloshenka in Long Island, New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new global study examines the impact of pharmaceutical substance pollution in the world's rivers. The study, a part of York University's Global Monitoring of Pharmaceuticals project, found potentially toxic levels of medications in the waters of more than a quarter of the 258 rivers studied, located in half the world's countries. Some 127 researchers from 86 scientific institutions around the world participated in the study's investigation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
China's wolf warrior diplomacy represents China as an aggressive rising superpower. The name is inspired by the Chinese blockbuster Wolf Warrior film franchise, whose first film debuted in 2015. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke with experts on the film and Chinese diplomacy about the franchise, its Hollywood influence, and its phenomenal appeal with Chinese audiences.
Wolf Warrior is a high-budget action film franchise about a Chinese soldier-turned-contractor fighting against American-led terrorist groups to protect China's interests.
The Wolf Warrior movie franchise and Wolf Warrior diplomacy are symptoms of the same attitude. They are symptoms together of the rise of China, of a new generation of Chinese who want to make more of an impact on the world, who are less inclined to compromise.
Wolf Warrior 2 was released in 2017 and took China by storm, earning nearly $900 million at the box office, with more than 99% of its revenue generated in the Chinese domestic market. Michael Berry, a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, says these films are based on Chinese melody films, state-sponsored films invoking nationalist pride.
They're often released to correspond with various national holidays, like National Day, and they resonate with various patriotic themes.
One of them is The Founding of a Republic, which was produced in 2009 to mark the 60th anniversary of the People's Republic of China. The Wolf Warrior film franchise is also modeled after 1980s American patriotic action film franchises, such as Rambo and Rocky, where the hero, played by Sylvester Stallone, fights against foreign villains in the name of American democracy and justice. In Wolf Warrior 2, the Chinese hero defends stranded Chinese civilians and defenseless Africans in an unnamed African country.
It's also got a colonialist attitude to non-white peoples. And we're just seeing the white savior of American action films being replaced by the Chinese savior in Chinese films.
The Wolf Warrior films boast cutting-edge special effects and feature Hollywood actors such as Frank Grillo, who plays Big Daddy, the American villain, in Wolf Warrior 2.
He played Crossbones in the Captain America films, and so he's a direct bridge between those two worlds. But it wasn't just Frank Grillo. Also, the action choreographer, I believe his name is Sam Hargrave. He was also the action choreographer for Captain America Civil War and a lot of these big Marvel films.
Despite this artistic and technological cross-pollination, the two film industries compete against each other, not only in terms of their message, but also in terms of box office revenue. Wolf Warrior 2 surpassed Avengers Endgame at the Chinese box office.
It was able to do the same kind of business that an Avengers movie does in one market. That's the China market, especially with the anti-American sentiment that's been rising since the period that Donald Trump was president. A lot of Chinese audiences have also cooled off about Hollywood.
Berry says China's effective handling of COVID-19 has allowed for the Chinese film industry to recuperate faster than Hollywood. He says it has also contributed to the surge of Chinese patriotism.
I think what we're seeing with this Wolf Warrior diplomacy are various diplomats and public figures from the Chinese public sphere or political sphere standing up and saying, we're not going to take this anymore. Enough of the humiliation. China is not your lapdog. We are not going to stand for it.
Berry adds that China's funding of Chinese blockbusters could sideline Hollywood experts in the Chinese market. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.